verse 10. That's what we discussed yesterday, isn't it? Bijam mam sarva bhudanam vidhi partha sanadhanam buddhi buddhimadam asmi tejas tejasvinam aham. Krishna is saying there. Then, or is that bijam mam sarva bhudanam? No, we finished that verse. Next one. Verse 11. Balam balavadam asmi kamaraga vivarjidam dharma aviruddha bodeshu kamosmi bharadarshava. Krishna is saying, balam balavadam chaham kamaraga vivarjidam dharma aviruddha bodeshu kamosmi bharadarshava. So here, what does the translation say? Translation says that the chapter 7. Yeah. I am the strength of the strong, devoid of passion and desire. I am sex life which is not contrary to the religious principles, O Lord of the Bharat, Arjuna. So, I am the strength of the strong, devoid of passion and desire. To understand this, what Krishna is saying there is that, Balam, among those who are powerful, the strength is me. Krishna says, what kind of strength is that? Kamaraga vivarjidam. Kamaraga vivarjidam. In other words, without attachment, any strength if you find in a person, without attachment and without desire linked to that. All the strength what you find in the world normally comes with attachment and with desire connected to it. That is where the balam comes from the person. Strength. Strength in a person. Kamaraga vivarjidam balam balavadam chaham. That power in a person which is free from kamam, desire, ragam, attachment, and if you see a power in a person like that is me, Krishna is saying. Why does Krishna say like that? Normally we will see, it's not that simply somebody is powerful. Say for example, there's a lot of people in this world who have a lot of physical strength. Isn't it? Or those who have got mental strength. Krishna is not saying, I am that. What Krishna is saying is, Balam balavadam chaham kamaraga vivarjidam. Wherever there is no attachment and there is no desire, and if I find the strength in that person, that power is me. That power in that person is me. This is a very subtle way Krishna is putting things to us. It says here, the commentary on that, Bhagavad Bhashyam, it says like this, that kamas trishna samnirkrishteshu vishayeshu rago ranjana prapteshu vishayeshu dhabhyam kama ragabhyam vivarjinam dehadi dharana matrartham balam sattvam aham asmi. In other words, kamas trishna sannikrishteshu vishayeshu rago prapteshu vishayeshu. So, therefore, things which are important for us in this life, where we have, which is our personal matters in this world, personal things, where we are interested in our personal life, that where we have attachment, that is called ragam. That is called ragam. So, in other words, suppose you have attachment for something in this life, attachment to say home or car and things like that, that is called ragam. What we have got already. Attachment to that is called ragam. And what we haven't got, which we like to have, the desire for that is kamam. Kamam is the desire to get something what we don't have. Ragam is the attachment to something what we have got. That is the difference between ragam and kamam. Both are attachment, but attachment what we have got already, that is ragam. And attachment what we don't have is called kamam. It's called kamam. So, when there is a power in a person without either of these, Krishna says here, it is a protective force for him. It protects that person. It protects that person. And actually, kshatram is that. Kshatram, which is kshatriya, comes from the word kshatram. That is without ragam and kama. Without ragam and kama. In this world, we act in different ways. So if you observe very carefully, you will notice the force behind our action is coming either from ragam or from kama. To protect what we have got, we act. That is ragam. To get something what we haven't got, we act. That's kama. So it has to fall in one of these two. Either it should be ragam or it should be kamam. That's why we act. Krishna is saying, if somebody acts in this world without ragam, without kamam, and he is performing some activity in this world, that power is Krishna. Balam balavadam jaham kamaragam vivarjitam. This is the way we have to understand. Otherwise, if you simply read the words and start thinking, oh, all the powerful people, only Krishna is there. Why, Krishna is not present in me. No, that's not how it is. That I'm the strength of the strong, and that strong is devoid of passion and desire. So, kamam and ragam, two powerful forces, isn't it? Which otherwise you can say ragadvesham, in other words. Ragadvesham, attachment and aversion. Aversion, kamam is a little bit more stronger than that. Because if you look into Bhagavad Gita, Krishna begins like that, isn't it? Kamaisthese hrudajnanam prabandhyanti anyadevada. Krishna says later. And earlier, krodhal bhavati samoham, samohal smriti vibrama, smriti bramshal buddhinasham, buddhinashal pranashyati. If you look the verses before that, Krishna is also says there that what does it say? The two verses before. What's that? No. Before Krishna reveals the secret of this getting anger in this world. Why people get angry, Krishna says there, isn't it? In second chapter. Dhyayado vishaya pumsan sangaste shubha jayade sangal sanjayade kamam kamal krothobi jayade. So this happens in a sequence, isn't it? So you can see there that dhyayado vishaya pumsan, it begins with meditation on a particular object. We either through one of the senses, we come to contact with a sense object. And when the sense object and the sense comes into contact, it creates an impression in the mind. Impression in the mind. And that impression is ragam or dvesham. Either a liking or disliking for that. Either a love or a hate relationship with that particular sense object. So, sangal sanjayade kamam. So where does kamam comes? Due to contact. Due to contact with the sense objects, the desire has come. Due to contact. If you had no contact with it, you won't get any desire. Only because the contact happened with the sense object, the desire developed inside. Sangal sanjayade kamam. And when that desire is not fulfilled, what happens? Kamal krodhobi jayade. Kamam, desire will turn into anger. Desire will develop into anger. And krodhal bhavati samoha. When that anger, when it will, if it is not checked immediately, what will happen? It will turn into delusion. And samohal smriti vibhrama. So when that delusion develops inside, he forgets about himself. Smriti bramshal buddhi nasham. What at point he loses all sense of discrimination. Buddhi nashal pranashyari. Immediately he falls. He falls down into that big powerful illusion in Maya. Then he doesn't know what he is doing. Isn't it? Then he doesn't know what he is doing. So there you can see the power of kamam. Krishna is talking about there. And that kamam and ragam. Ragam is to what we have got. Attachment to something. Anything. House, car, and wife, children, that's all ragam, attachment in some form or the other. Kama raga vivarjitam, Krishna is saying here, that so this power, what Krishna is talking about, is not that force in us, which is meant for, it's a, you know, the wild power in everyone to control others, to control, to acquire others' property or wealth, or to become rich by exploiting others. It's not that power Krishna is talking about. It's not that power. For example, there are many people who are business people who are into business and who have the capacity to exploit every opportunity to make money by exploiting others and things like that. That is not the power Krishna is, that Krishna doesn't say that it is him. He's not saying that. What Krishna is saying here, that any force you see in a person where there is no ragam, attachment, or there is no kamam, desire behind it to acquire something, that is me. So, through your own power, you can acquire many things in this world. That is why Krishna specifically mentions here kama raga vivarjitam, free from kamam and free from ragam, attachment. That means that person has no attachment anywhere, has no attachment anywhere, and he has no desire either that he wants something. He doesn't have any desire either. So, in other words, whatever he has got, he has no attachment there, and he has no desire either for something what he hasn't got, what he hasn't got. Balam balavadam chaham aham cha aham kamaraga vivarjitam. There is no kamam, there is no ragam there. There is no attachment and there is no desire for anything. And that power gives him protection. That power, it's a power actually in a person. When you see that in anyone, it is his protective power. It is a protection for him that gives him protection. It is not only the physical protection, it's protection. Protection is, this is the subtle level it protects us, these things. So, if you look back into Ramayanam, you will see some examples like this. In Ramayanam, there is an example like that. Hanuman, Anjaneya, his life is a perfect example of this. Perfect example of this. He had the least attachment to anything when he was doing his service to Ramachandra. Therefore, you can see there, Sugriva selected Hanuman for this particular reason. Why Hanuman was selected to go to Sri Lanka looking for Sita Devi? It was for this reason. Hanuman was above this Kamaraga, had this great quality. He was very powerful, at the same time Kamaraga Vivarjitam. He was able to go there looking for Sita Devi and no attachment anywhere in any instances. He was attached to Ramachandra, but at the same time under no circumstances will break the law. He will break the law. It mentions about that. There is a verse in the Ramayanam, before he selected Hanuman to go to Lanka looking for Sita Devi, what it says there in Krishna Kandam, there is this verse. It says that Toyeva Hanuman Asti Balam Buddhi Parakrama Deshakala Anuvritti Ja Naya Ja Naya Pandita. He says Toyeva Hanuman Asti Balam Buddhi Parakramam. Five things he is spoken here, that I see in you, Hanuman, these five qualities. What are they? Asti balam buddhi parakramam. Balam means this power, like this. Balam, what Krishna calls it as balam here. It is needed at that point. And in Hanuman, it was expected to have them for the type of work what he was going to take up looking for Sita Devi. That's why it's mentioned, Toyeva Hanuman Asti. You alone has this astuteness in you, balam, buddhi, intelligence, and parakramam, that heroic nature in you. Deshakala anuvritti, you know how to behave according to the time and circumstances. Nayaja, naya pandita, and you are also tactful enough how to deal with the personalities who are present there. Sugriva, place and time, place, to behave properly according to the time and place. It says like that with it. So, you have got the power, you have got the intelligence, and some people you will notice, they have the strength, but they don't have the intelligence, proper intelligence. Some people have the intelligence, but they don't have the strength. In Hanuman, Sugriva found everything, what was necessary. So, it is because of this, that one who is intelligent, they use the one who has got power. In this world, it is like that, isn't it? Those who have got intelligence, they use those who have got the power. That is the rule of the world. It will always be like that. So, sometimes you find somebody has got power and somebody has the strength and someone else has got the intelligence. So, they one who has got intelligence, he will use the one who has got power or strength, but who has no intelligence. He will use him in this world. So, balam, buddhi, parakramam, three things, strength and intelligence, and also that courage, what Hanuman had. Nobody else had that. The courage also, to act in the proper way. Because when he went to look for Sita Devi, he knew what danger is involved there. Ravana's men were everywhere. All the Rakshasas were present. And he also knew the strength of Ravana's army and Ravana's sons, Indrajit and Meghanad, everything was known to him. But if you observe Ravana and if you observe Hanuman, you will see when Deshakalanu Vrittischa, that Hanuman was so, in his behavior, he was such a great personality that Ramachandra was even impressed by Hanuman's behavior. Hanuman's behavior. Well, that is why Sugriva chose specifically Hanuman for this reason, which other Vanaras didn't have. If you remember, the first time when Sugriva meets the arrangement was made by Hanuman. Hanuman made the arrangement for Sugriva to meet with Ramchandra and Lakshmana, isn't it? So in that meeting itself, the first time, Krishamukachalam, that's where Sugriva was living in fear of Bali. He was living there. So they sent him. They asked Hanuman as their representative to go and see Ramchandra. So he went to see Ramchandra. And the first impression Ramchandra got by seeing Hanuman is mentioned in the Ramayanam. He says, I've seen the most intelligent person. He talks about Hanuman like this. Everything is so perfect, he says. You must have studied all the three Vedas, he says. Why is it like that? Each Vedam, if one studies well, certain qualities will develop in that person. That is the beauty. And that mentions there in the Ramayanam. Rigvedam, if you study, you become extremely humble. Yajurvedam, if you study, you become very intelligent. Like that, Rigvedam, Yajurvedam, Samayana, three Vedam, three things are spoken. Can't remember all three. But those three things, whatever you speak with perfection, to speak things without creating any disturbances in the person's mind, Hanuman was able to convey the message from Sugriva. And this impressed Ramachandra very much. And Ramachandra says, I have no doubt that you have studied all the three Vedas. This is how Ramachandra honors Hanuman. Because whatever he spoke, there was no error in anything. It was so perfect speech and everything. And secondly, that humility in Hanuman and the intelligent way he spoke, Ramchandra concludes about Hanuman. So here it says also, Deshagalana Vrittischa. So to use your courage and strength, that heroic nature, according to the time and circumstance, place, that requires intelligence. Hanuman had that intelligence. So whatever one should do, so that the result is auspicious. That is the purpose behind it. And Hanuman was able to perform that in that way. So, Sugriva says to Hanuman, you have got all of those things. And therefore, Hanuman was selected. Power is there. He had the power in him. But in that power, there is no desire and there is no attachment. And it is with that power, Hanuman goes to Lanka. And Lanka was burned by Hanuman, isn't it? With the tail, he burned the Lanka and he comes back. He saw Sita Devi and he comes back. And immediately Ramchandra embraces Hanuman and says to him, you have done something which nobody else could have done. Why? Because in your power, there is no kamam or there is no ragam. There is no attachment or there is no desire behind it. There is no desire behind it. So, and also the other thing was, Hanuman had noticed one thing, that he did not want any recognition either, that he has done something important. He did not feel any need of recognition either. So therefore, your power is real power. Ramchandra says to Hanuman like this. And Ramchandra gives him a blessing at that time. What is that blessing? Blessing is like this, that I will never be able to give back this to you, this what you have done to me. Ramchandra is now talking to Hanuman purely on a human level. On a human level he is talking to him, that I will never be able, this is the blessing he has given to Hanuman, that I will never be able to repay this to you. What Ramchandra was saying to him was that let this what you have done to me, this help what you offered me done, let this get dissolved in me. In other words, that you should not face a similar situation like me. What Ramchandra was at that point, Sita Devi was kidnapped by Ravana, and let the same not happen to you. In other words, this is how Ramchandra gave the blessings to Hanuman. But Hanuman is a brahmachari, so he has no problem about that. Hanuman did not expect anything in return from that. Did not expect anything from return from that. So it's like this, that make the understand better. Say you are traveling on the road, an accident happened, and somebody has been hit by a car, and the car drove off, and the person is lying there. And you somehow felt that it's your duty to take him to the hospital. You took him in your car and took him to the hospital, and he was treated in the hospital, and he got better, and then he recognized that you were the person who took him to the hospital. Now, if he blesses you, saying that, let me also get an opportunity one day to repay you back in the same way, is that a nice blessing? So, similarly, so that is why Ramchandra is saying like this to Hanuman, that let this not happen to you. Let me be able to pay you back, not in the same way. That's Ramchandra talking to him like that. That is basically the message in that way. So here, he says here, so in other words, let this not happen to you also. Anyway, this didn't happen to Hanuman because he never got married, and separation from wife, all these things never happened to Hanuman at the end. So that is the secret of that power. Kamaraga vivarjitam. There is no attachment anywhere, in anything, in anywhere. you can see there, later on, after the war was over, and even Sugriva had desire. Sugriva wanted to get the kingdom back from Bali, isn't it? Bali was killed and he wanted the kingdom back. And after the war was over, when they came back to Ayodhya, and everybody else were given various recognitions, awards were given to all other personalities who assisted Ramchandra in the war. They were all given different awards and recognition awards. But only to Hanuman, nothing was given. It didn't bother to him. He was not bothered about that. And that actually even affected Sita Devi. She was also amazed by Hanuman's renunciation inside. That never looking for any kind of recognition from anywhere, but able to act at every opportunity in the proper way, in the right way. That is what Krishna is calling here as Balam Balavadam Chaham. That power in a person, able to do things in the proper way without any attachment or aversion to anything, that strength, Krishna says, that's me. Balam Balavadam Chaham Kamaraga Vivarjitam Dharmam Aviruddha Bodeshu. And that is the reason when Hanuman never fails anywhere. Never fails anywhere, isn't it? When Mahabharata war was happening, Hanuman came and occupied on the flag of Arjuna. On the flag of Arjuna also. And Hanuman was hearing Bhagavad Gita, and Hanuman was enjoying hearing Bhagavad Gita. Arjuna had all the questions. Hanuman had no question. You notice that? Hanuman had no question. Arjuna had doubts. And at some point when Krishna was talking, Hanuman stepped in and started talking Bhagavad Gita in the middle of that, and Arjuna started saying something that in the ecstasy of hearing that Bhagavad Gita, and Krishna stopped Hanuman and told him that, don't you know, realize that it is not right to say like this. Hanuman says, that doesn't matter. As long as Bhagavad Gita is spoken, no matter whichever circumstances, it is justified. Hanuman's answer. Krishna says, if that is so, that although you have, Hanuman's explanation of Bhagavad Gita is, that will not remain in this world, which is called as Paishajika Bhashyam. That is why that Hanuman's commentary on Bhagavad Gita didn't come, stay back in this world. It was lost. But Hanuman is a personality you will see in Ramayanam as well as in the Mahabharatam also, giving strength to Arjuna. That Arjuna can never fail a battle whenever Hanuman is present in the in his flag. So the most auspicious situation in Ramayanam is the one of the important cantos in the Ramayanam is when Hanuman meets Sita Devi first time, isn't it? Hanuman meets Sita Devi. The canto which appears in the Bhagavatam is Sundarakandam. Sundarakandam is where Hanuman and Sita Devi meets. Sita Devi was very depressed. She was sitting there thinking about Ramchandra, whether Ramchandra will come or not, or what's going to happen. All these thoughts, and Ravana was forcing her to accept as him as a husband. And she was in that delicate situation underneath the tree, sitting there, and Hanuman arrives there. So, and in that sense, what happens? In Sita Devi was surprised by Hanuman's behavior. Why? Hanuman's behavior. So that say the verse there, Vikramam, it says, Vikrandastvam samarthatvam prajnatvam vanara uttama yena idam rakshasavadam toy egena pradarshitam. He says here, Sita Devi is saying, Vikrandatvam samarthatvam prajnatvam vanara uttama. So how did you manage to get here? Because so many demons were employed there to look after Sita Devi. They were present there. And you are yena idam rakshasapadam toy egena pradarshidam. That to break through all that to come here, you have to be somewhat highly intelligent to break through this whole thing. Dadarsha pingalam, it says, Dadarsha pingalam, it says in the next verse, it says that, yeah. Sita Devi sa viksamana prutubhunga vaktramam shakhamam ugrehasya yathoktharam dadarsha pinga pravaram maharaham vadalpajam buddhimadam varishtam. Vadalpajam dadarsha pinga pravaram vadalpajam buddhimadam varishtam. He says, Vadalpajam buddhimadam varishtam. O son of Vayuputra, Vayu son is Hanuman, isn't it? Vayu son is Hanuman. Buddhimadam varishtam. You are the most intelligent person. And not only that, you are acted purely on the instructions of Sugriva. So he says here that Sita Devi is crying there. And Shoka Mohena. So at that point, Shokam and Moham is already there. How to approach Sita Devi? This was the problem in Hanuman's mind. First of all, Sita Devi was not expecting Hanuman. And Sita Devi was doubting everybody who had come to talk to her. She always thought Ravana is sending someone to change her mind. And it was difficult for Sita Devi to hold on like that for a very long period of time. Ravana sent a lot of Rakshasis first to talk to Sita Devi to change her mind, to accept as Ravana's wife. So this didn't happen. So instead of straight away jumping in front of Sita Devi and saying to her that I am the representative of Ramachandra, Sita Devi would have doubted about that. So what did Hanuman do first? Hanuman started speaking Ramachandra's story, sitting on the top of the tree. He started speaking in a very sweet tone. He started speaking about the story of Ramachandra. When Ramachandra's story was spoken like that, Sita Devi heard and started thinking, what a sweet voice, who is talking about Ramachandra? In order to change that mind, that fearful mind of Sita Devi, Hanuman has to do like this, has to present it like that. And Ramachandra says about that later, that if somebody wants to kill Hanuman and takes a sword to kill him, even he will drop his sword by hearing his voice. So sweet was the voice from Hanuman. He says to him, you know Rigvedam, you know Yajurvedam, and Vayam Vedam, and all the Vedams, are all the three of them are known to him. You know the science behind the sound, Shabda Shastram. Shabda Shastram is known to you. You know the grammar very well. You know everything. And Hanuman has only spoken about 5 minutes. And by now, Ramchandra is talking like this about Hanuman. Because he says in Sundarakandam that sitting underneath that Ashoka tree, that hearing about Ramakatha, Rama's story, and Valmiki keeps on discussing about that, that about Hanuman's color, and whom did Hanuman see? Hanuman is considered among the jnanis, self-realized souls, among them the most intelligent person. Hanuman is the most intelligent person. So, where did he see the stages when it happened was, yesterday remember we talked about Tejas Tejaswinamaham, what a Tejas means. Hanuman was tied down by Indrajit. Indrajit was Ravana's son. Tied him and brought him to the palace. So, by now, after seeing Sita Devi, Hanuman has went around in Sri Lanka and smashed the whole place down. With his tail, he has smashed the whole place down and set fire to many places. After all that, Ravana brings him, Indrajit managed to bring him, tie him down and bring him in. So Ravana is asking the question, is this really a monkey? I have never seen a monkey like this before. Even Ravana got the doubt seeing the behavior of Hanuman. That dignified way Hanuman came and behaved with Ravana. Even Ravana was so impressed by this personality, Hanuman. He says there that, I'm not 100% sure. I'm not sure, he says, that he is a vanara, he's a monkey. In other words, bring him anyway. Indrajit brought him with Brahmastram. So it's an amazing scene. If you read in the Ramayanam, you will see this there. That exactly like Krishna went to that place in the Kurukshetram in the Sabha, in the assembly of Kauravas, how Krishna went there, and when Krishna got there, immediately everybody got up there, isn't it? And similarly, when Hanuman walked in, Ravana got up from his, without any, knowing very well that Hanuman has caused all this disturbances in Lanka, immediately Ravana gets up from his seat, seeing Hanuman. That is Tejas. That we call it as Tejas, Tejaswinamaham. Remember that verse earlier, we talked about that. So this is called Tejas. The Tejas in a person. So, Ravana says like that, Kimesho Bhagavan Nandi Bhavel Saksha Ihaga. Is it coming Nandi? Nandi is Lord Shiva's bull. Is that coming now? What is this form? I have never seen like this one before. And Ravana was so impressed, he says, Balam Balavalam Tejas Tejaswinamaham. That Tejas of Hanuman. So, all three things, Tejas, Balam, Buddhi, intelligence, all of them were in Hanuman to a very high level, very high degree. Kamaraga Vivarjitam. You will also notice in Ramayanam another instance, when Nagastram was fired, everyone fell, including Ramachandra fell, isn't it? Including Ramachandra fell. And Vibhishana was not involved in the fight. So therefore Vibhishana didn't have to fight the war. He didn't fight in the war. They followed certain principles in the fighting also. And the reason is that it is a fighting, there are certain rules that Vibhishana pulled out of fighting. Although he left Ravana and came to Ramchandra's side, he pulled out of the fighting, and therefore the Rakshasas won't fight with Vibhishana. Vibhishana was staying away from the war in the battle. So after Ramachandra, Lakshmana and everybody fell, Vibhishana was in a difficult state because his side is losing the battle. So he had lighted one torch and he's wandering around all over looking who is anyone left still in the battlefield who has got some life in them. Ramachandra including lost his consciousness and he was lying there. Lakshmana also. And they are walking all around. And suddenly they saw Jambavan there. Jambavan woke up. Jambavan is a Chiranjeevi. He will never die. Jambavan's history is like that. He is a Chiranjeevi. He will never die. So Jambavan lifted his head. And you know what Jambavan asked Vibhishana first? Have you looked for Hanuman anywhere? He didn't ask for anybody else except Hanuman. That is Hanuman's position. Then Jambavan knew if Hanuman is there, there will be a solution to the problem. Indrajit managed to make everyone unconscious and go from there. It is then that, exactly like Jambavan expected, Hanuman came to the rescue. Hanuman goes to the Himalayan mountains and bring the whole hill of medicines, not knowing which medicine is required, brought the whole hill back to Lanka for the battle. So here, people asked him at that, Vibhishana asked Jambavan, why you are asking about Hanuman when we are all here? At that same, he says here that, Jambavan says at that time, if Anjana's son, Anjaneya is Hanuman, isn't it? If Hanuman is living, everyone else will live. I am sure about that. He says about Hanuman. Otherwise, whomever it may be, there is no use, he says there. So, that is why Hanuman goes to Himalayas and from there brings that plant called Mrudasanjeevani, brings it. And with the help of that Mrudasanjeevani, everybody else gets their life back. Ramachandra, Lakshmana and others, they all come back to life. That is what it says here. Balam balavaram chaham kamaraga vivarjidam dharmam aviruddha bodeshu kamosmi bharadarshabha. Krishna is saying here that the second part, dharmam aviruddha bodeshu kamosmi bharadarshabha. Isn't it? Dharmam aviruddha bodeshu. What does that mean? Krishna says that that religious principles which are not, the desire which is not against the religious principles, dharmam aviruddha bodeshu kamosmi bharadarshabha. So it says that I am sex life which is not contrary to religious principles. That's what it says. It's a very complicated thing, isn't it? Understand. Everybody has a lot of questions on this. This is one question, it always comes back. What does it mean? That dharmam aviruddha kameshu kamosmi, aviruddha bhudeshu kamosmi bharadarshabha. What it means actually is this, that is it wrong to have desire? Is it wrong to have desires in a person? Because earlier Krishna has spoken about that, isn't it? One should have no desires, isn't it? That is the perfect. So, but Krishna knows very well that is it wrong to have desire, or Krishna says here, to have desires is not wrong. But what is wrong is that it should not be against the principles of religiosity. Principles of religiosity. That means, which is not against religious principles, that desire is not wrong. That desire is not wrong. Any desire, what does that mean? If it is, you are destined to have it. The destiny is such, you are going to have it. You are going to get it. And if it is not against the laws of material nature, you have to take each one of this into account when you talk about that verse. First thing, it should happen in life due to destiny, it should come. Prarabdham, it must come to you. Not by endeavoring hard, you should get it. It should happen to you in a way that that you are meant to have it. In other words, destiny should bring it to you. By due to destiny, it should happen. Something comes to us in a way, in that way. And if it is not against the principles of material nature, for example, material nature, when we live in this world, the nature has gotten certain flow pattern in this world, isn't it? Without disturbing the nature, nature's law, which we all know what that means, isn't it? That without disturbing other living entities in this world, without breaking the laws of material nature, if anything, if it is given to you, if it is not breaking that law, if it is not causing any violence towards other living entities, if you fulfill that desire, it is what Krishna calls it as dharma aviruddha bhudeshu. Dharmam aviruddha bhudeshu. So, if it is not causing any distress to someone, or it's also not causing any ragadvesham, attachment, aversion in somebody else, himsa, violence, or distress to somebody else, pain, and if you fulfill your desire in that way, that Krishna says that that particular action should lead to liberation from this world. You see this. In Karma Yoga we discuss this, isn't it? Karma vasana is in everybody. We all have vasanas inside. And vasana means the impressions inside. By performing action, we have created desires inside. It has created desire and the karmam is over, karmam finished. But what has karmam done? Karmam has left behind the desires inside us. And that desires has become vasana. Initially it has come as a chitavati, it has developed into what is known as samskaram, and samskaram has become a vasana. In three levels it has happened. Chittavritti is the first time you have a desire for something, suddenly you felt a desire for something, I would like to have that or like to possess something. Now, that is the first one. That means it marks a line inside. In the form of a line it takes. You started meditating on that, how nice it would be if I have that. If that thought gets stronger, this line will get thickened inside. That means the chittavritti has become a samskaram. Chittavritti has become a samskaram. And that same thought, if it gets still stronger, it becomes a vasana. It becomes a vasana. So for example, it can be in all dealings in this world, this can develop into. This form can develop. You have felt uneasy with somebody, some kind of uneasy relationship developed with someone in this world. You got upset with someone, and that makes the first line, anger. It develops into a line. And if the same thing happens again with him, that line gets thickened inside. It gets thickened. That becomes a samskaram. And then, suppose it has happened again a few times, it turns into what is known as vasana inside. Once it has become a vasana, then you can't do anything about it. It has to happen. And it has to get released. That vasana has to get through. You have to experience through that, the result of that. You cannot pull back again. If it is in the early stage of the chittavritti or in the samskaram stage, you can still have some control over it. But once it has developed into vasana state, then it is impossible to pull back from that state. And that is why it says that vasana, it has developed in a person, vasana will only go, it has to be released through action. Through action it has to get released. So all the karma vasanas inside, what we have, it has to be released through action. And therefore, Krishna gave us what is known as karma yoga for this reason. That is the only way you can release those vasanas which are strongly present inside us to get it exhausted. If you don't get them exhausted, that vasana will stay in the subtle body and you have to come back and take another body to experience that. That means another birth again, accepting another body again. The cycle of birth and death continue, life after life. So this is the subtle side of our existence in this body. So what Krishna is saying here, while exhausting these vasanas inside, if that happens in a natural way means, in order to exhaust the vasanas, you don't have to go all the way out working for it. Oh, I have to exhaust my vasanas. Let me exhaust my vasanas. So I go around all the world to give trouble to everyone. Prabhu, I got this vasana in me. I want to give you some few punches to get rid of my vasana from me. That's not what it is meant. What Krishna is saying here, that you have to understand this. Otherwise, you will get misunderstood everything. Vasana is in us. And vasana will have to go through. It has to get released. But karma has to happen in a natural... Krishna's arrangement is so perfect that in our life we will be exposed to a situation where that karma vasana will flow through us. It has to flow through us. Like Arjuna had the battlefield, Arjuna was in. Why was Arjuna brought there? His karma vasana was there in him as a kshatriya. It can be only exhausted in the... He has to fight. He has no choice. He has no choice because he had that vasana in him to fight. And the only way it can be released is through a battle, through the battlefield, in the battlefield. That's where it can be exhausted. So what did Krishna do? Krishna is saying to Arjuna, Arjuna, even if you want to stay away from the war, you won't be able to do it. Because you had come here to get that vasanas to go through. You will not be able to pull out of it. But what can be done? That is what Krishna is saying here. Dharmam aviruddha bhudeshu kamosmi bharadarshava. That whatever karmam we have to perform to fulfill our exhaustive vasanas, if that karmam is not causing any distress to someone, because we are not all Arjuna, are we? We don't have to go to the battlefield every day to fight the war. We don't have to kill people. Arjuna had a most complex activity to do. He has to fight a war and not to feel attached to the result. Imagine that state. Arjuna had the most difficult job Arjuna had. That is why is it Arjuna was chosen for this? Because if Arjuna can practice Bhagavad Gita in the battlefield, Krishna's question is, why ordinary people like us cannot take Bhagavad Gita on board? In our life, it is not so complex like Arjuna's life is. In Arjuna's life was the most complex one of all, because violence is involved there, and he has to have that revengeful mood to fight a battle, isn't it? Otherwise, it's very difficult to be a soldier like a sadhu. You can't fight a battle, can you? You can't fight a battle if you are a sadhu there. Oh, I won't touch anybody. Arjuna was a sadhu in the beginning, but Krishna changed that sadhu nature in him and made him realize that you are a kshatriya, vasana is there in you. And if you don't fight this battle, you are not going to escape from here. The vasana will follow you again. You'll have to fight the war. So similarly, in this world, Krishna is telling us that we have vasanas in us, but whatever activities we have to perform in this world, it should happen in a natural way. It should come and we have to perform that, we should perform, and that way the vasana should go from us. But while performing that action, it should be done in the form of a karma yogam. Karma yogam, it should be performed. In that way, slowly all the vasanas what we have created inside will get released one after the other and we become freed from the vasana. Otherwise, come back again and accept another body. That's why he says here that if it is not against the religious dharma aviruddham, that means it should happen in a natural way. Like prarabdham, it should come to us. It should come. And if it is destined to happen, in other words, if destiny is there that it is meant to happen, it can happen. It should happen in that way. Not that you should all the way go out looking for an opportunity to exhaust the vasana. No. In a way, if it happens in that way, it is okay. Then secondly, if it should not be against the laws of material nature. The laws of nature you should not break. That is wrong thing to do. Laws of nature, material nature means, even while executing our work in this world, if it is disturbing others in any way, if it is causing distress to others, that is not allowed. That is against the principles of religious principles. So, and no violence involved, and from that action, no ragadvesham should develop afterwards. Say, for example, if you had to do some activity in this world, and that activity is creating more ragam and dvesham later, then that, what is the point? That means vasanas will get strengthened afterwards. So, ultimately what Krishna is saying there is that by performing that activity, it should lead to liberation, not to bondage again. To liberation. Liberation should be the ultimate result from that. If it happens like that is dharmam aviruddha bhudeshu kamosmi bharadarshava. That is the way to understand those two lines. Naturally, the Vedic literature expects a very high standard in actions and very high fineness in everything. How many people take all these things into account when they engage in action? In the modern society, all our actions are based on our gross mind, isn't it? We have a gross way of thinking. What is beneficial for me, I'll do it. I don't care what others think about it or what happens to others. All these considerations don't exist. But in a very advanced society, in the Vedic society, these principles matter a lot. And that is why Krishna is saying there, if you want to free yourself from karma, this is the only way that it can get exhausted. Balam balavadam chaham kamaraga vivarjidam dharmam aviruddha bodeshu kamosmi bharadarshava. Krishna is saying that on an absolute platform, if you want to progress in the spiritual side, if you want to develop yourself on the spiritual path, Krishna says there is no other way. These are instructions to all of us to take into account in that way. So, Ragadvesha Vimukteistu. Remember, because earlier he said this in the second chapter, isn't it? Ragadvesha Vimukteistu Vishayan Indriyaischaran. Remember that verse? What Krishna says? That Ragadvesha Vimukteistu Vishayan Indriyaischaran. Ragam and Dvesham won't go unless karma is executed in this pattern. This is the problem. Unless karma is executed in this pattern. Ragadvesha Vimukteistu Vishayan Indriyaischaran. 64. In the second chapter you will see that verse. 64th verse. Krishna is saying there that the Ragadvesha Vimukteistu Vishayan Indriyaischaran Alma Vashir Vithayalma Prasadam Abhigacchati. It's a very important verse. One who can control his senses by practicing the regulated principles of freedom can obtain the complete mercy of the Lord and thus become free from all attachment and aversion. All attachment and aversion. So, Krishna's point is, Ragadvesha Vimukteistu Vishayan Indriyaischaran. Whenever we engage in action, indriya, senses come into action. Isn't it? Senses comes into action when we engage in action. Senses of knowledge and senses of action, both of them comes into action when we engage in karma. When we engage in karma. That, Alma Vashir Vithay Alma Prasadam Abhigacchati. Krishna says, one who has control of these things, if it is not creating any ragadvesham, it will lead into liberation. Atma Vashir Vithay Alma. And such a person, whatever karma he is executing in this world, he will be always in a happy state. Prasadam abhigacchati. He will be in the prasadam state. He will always be in a very happy mood. Happy in the sense that ragam and dvesham is not created from the action. Therefore, it is not touching the subtle body. It is not touching. Action is performed by the senses without touching the subtle body. Without touching the subtle body. That's why Krishna says there, one who can control his senses by practicing the regulated principles of freedom can obtain the complete mercy of the Lord and thus become free from all attachment and aversion. Otherwise, it is impossible to free ourselves from these two things. Ragadvesham. I remember earlier we said this. What is our life in this world means four things. Kartrutvam, Bhoktrutvam. I am the doer, I am the enjoyer. Ragam, Desham. Attachment, aversion. Without these four, you can't carry on in this world. Every day, this is what is going through us. Kartrutvam, Bhoktrutvam, Ragam, Dvesham. Nothing else. Everything I am doing and the results will come, I must enjoy on one level. Another level, everything what I have done, it has created some attachment or it has created some aversion. If you take these four things away from us, there is nothing left. Isn't it? Any action you take, for example, anything in this world will be within these four. It's happening within the four things. Ragadvesham, Kartrutva, Bhoktrutvam. That's why the science of the influence of karma on us is so powerful and it holds us in so subtle level. To free from that, we require the support of Bhagavad Gita, understanding of Bhagavad Gita. Otherwise, it's impossible to understand. How does karma? Many people say, oh, I am a devotee, there is no more karma for me. That is not true. Nowhere it's written like that. That Krishna is not saying that. What Krishna is saying there that even if, no matter who it is in this world, you are still bound by this laws of karma. Laws of karma. We are not given any free hand in those things. So Krishna says there that if you, so there is no attachment, there is no aversion. Krishna says that if by executing that particular karma, if you are advancing in the process of liberation, that then Krishna says here that that is the proper dharma. Dharmam aviruddha bhudeshu kamam asmi aradarshabha. So this is very carefully we have to hear, because we have no other enemy more than our own mind. The most powerful enemy what we have got is our own mind. So it will give a commentary on everything what we think. It will make its own commentary and tell us that what we should do and what we, according to our convenience. The mind's nature is like that, isn't it? Even if you hear something from Bhagavad Gita or Bhagavadam or anywhere, or even if you develop some desire, the mind will start making its own commentary on that. And that is considered, Krishna says there, that that is a symptom of avidya, ignorance in a person. Ignorance in a person. Any desire is a form of incompletion. In other words, how do you know an action is perfect in this world? This is the question. How do we know an action is perfect in this world? If by performing a particular action in this world, if it does not leave behind any trace of desire inside again, if it does not leave any trace of another desire inside or another hate inside to that similar action what we have performed, then that action is perfect. Every action we perform, it creates either a desire inside or an attachment inside or an aversion inside. So any action that is performed in this world, if it does not create any attachment or aversion inside us, that the way the karma has just flown through us without creating any disturbances inside, then that action, Krishna says, is perfect. Krishna says it is perfect. Provided if it has created any desire, either in the form of attachment, any thoughts inside, either in the form of attachment or aversion, that means that action is not complete. You see that? Why it's not complete? Because that not complete is actually it's not complete because you have already planted the seed for the next action. That's why. See how subtle the science of karma is. Karma we do without thinking anything. But the damage is not immediate. Damage is in the long term. We do so many wonderful things in this world and think that everything is sanctioned by the higher authority. No, higher authority has not sanctioned that. Higher authorities are telling us, Krishna is telling us, that you understand this science. That is why in a very subtle level it's spoken. All our karma, if it has created further waves inside, and if it again pushes, propels us to engage in another karma, that means the karma is not complete. It's going from life after life after life. And it is this karma parampara or this continuous flow of karma that is forcing us to keep on accepting body after body after body, life after life. This is the principle behind it. It is our karma alone that is causing us to keep on changing this body. Why? In some previous lifetime we have created some karma. The result of that, to enjoy or suffer, we have got this body. In this body, we are creating again more karma. Karma vasanas otherwise inside. Which means another body has to come. We have to accept another body to exhaust those vasanas again. Continuous cycle that is. And that is what Krishna is saying here. This incompletion. That means desire means... any desire, if it is created inside, that means we are still a beggar. That is the begging nature inside. That my desire, I want this, I want that. Again, wanting, endless wanting, desires that is developing. So Bhikshapatrami says the plot like that. So and the person who has realized this, he may externally look like a beggar, but inside he is an emperor. Inside he is an emperor. Externally he may look like a beggar who has nothing, but inside, who has exhausted all desires, he is an emperor. There was this famous sannyasi, we talked about him before also, Ramatirtha, isn't it? Swami Ramatirtha, he probably in the early 1900 he lived. And Ramatirtha has reached that stage, freedom from all desires. And he wandered around all over the world. Eventually when he came to America, it was then that Ramatirtha arrived in America with a cloth bag in the hand. He had nothing with him otherwise. He didn't know where he was going. He arrived in the ship from Japan. So at the docks when he landed, the ship arrived and he came out of the plane. He had no clue where to go. So some person saw him in this particular dress, like a sannyasi cloth he was having. And he asked Ramatirtha, "Where are you going?" He says, "I don't know." He says, Ramatirtha's answer. "So where are you going to stay?" he says. He says, "Whoever provides me shelter, I'll stay with him." Full confidence he was answering all these questions. And this person who saw Ramatirtha got very interested in his confidence and took him home and looked after him there. For a few days he was staying with him. After that, one day when Ramatirtha felt that he wanted to walk away from there, Ramatirtha left home and started wandering around the forest in America at that time. In the early 50s this incident happened. In the early 1900. It so happened at that time, Ramatirtha was a realized soul. He spoke very eloquently about Vedanta philosophy. He was a great speaker also from that philosophical point of view. And he had many people wanted to listen to Ramatirtha. Somehow or the other, it came to the attention of President Roosevelt. Roosevelt came to know about him. So they wanted to have an appointment. Roosevelt wanted to see Ramatirtha, this special personality who has arrived. And there is a meeting arranged. You will see this in the internet also, you can read about this, that Ramatirtha's meeting with Roosevelt. Roosevelt sees Ramatirtha and Ramatirtha introduces to him, to Roosevelt, "I am Emperor Rama." This is how he is introducing himself. "I am Emperor Rama," he says. So Roosevelt could not understand what he is talking about. "Here I am the President of the United States," he is saying, "I am the Emperor Rama," he says. So Roosevelt very politely asked him, "Where is your empire? Where is that empire?" he says. So Ramatirtha spoke to Roosevelt like this. Ramatirtha says to him that you are in this position. After a lot of struggle you got here. And that also maximum you are guaranteed 8 years, 4 years if you get a second term. After that you have to go. But in my empire, I am always the emperor, first thing. I don't change. There is no change. I am always the empire. And you, to maintain your position here, you need all these people. Without their help and without their support, you are not the president. They can always pull you down also. In politics, all these things happen, isn't it? Later on it happened with Nixon and others. Impeachment and all that. So president's role is also not guaranteed for you. So, but you claim that you are a big president and all that, but I am in still better position. Nobody can pull me down from this state where I am," he says. Why? Self-realization is like that. In that state, when they see our material designations in this world, there is no value for it. We give a lot of importance to all this president, prime minister and all that. In a mundane level, material world, we give all this importance to it. But in the self-realized platform, a jnani or a realized soul or a yogi, they see all these things, position we hold so dear to us, as insignificant from their point of view. That's why Ramatirtha was able to speak so straight with him, because of that firm realization inside. When you come to the platform of Brahman realization, what Krishna is saying here, where is the enemy? Where is the friend? There is no friend, there is no enemy. So you can speak the truth in the proper way. In the proper way. He realized the truth what he was talking to him. So so in the same thing you can see here that the certain things in life, according to prarabdham, it will come. According to prarabdham, it will come. I think we'll stop today. It's time, quite late. All glory to Srila Prabhupada.
Srila Prabhupada.